Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I'm Scott Trout, CEO of the domestic litigation firm Cordell & Cordell. We help men deal with the life changes triggered by divorce, such as child custody and property division, among many others. But life changes also occur after divorce. These changes can make parts of your existing court order irrelevant or harder to follow. If you feel a modification to your court orders might be necessary, talk to us at Cordell & Cordell. We're a partner men can count on.
Contact CordellCordell.com. 1065 East Hillsdale Boulevard, Suite 310, Foster City, California, 94404.
You are listening to The Bird Calls on the Off the Glass Nothing But Net and Up and Under networks. For more on your Pelicans, go to iTunes, search The Bird Calls, and subscribe today. What's up, Pels fans? Welcome to another episode of the Bird Calls podcast, and this one's a celebratory one. I'm your host and contributor to the BirdRights.com, B-Ball Index, and various other enterprises, Preston Ellis. And tonight, we are not going to stop gushing about Drew Holiday, Etuan Moore, as they lit the Raptors on fire tonight on both ends with 59 points, all while keeping Kyle Lowry from getting a bucket until the 340 mark in the fourth quarter. They won 126-110. AD played like an MVP. Julius Randle was great, and the Pelicans give the Raptors their first home loss of the season and second of the year. They dropped a 12.
Hi, this is Scott Trout, CEO of the domestic litigation firm Cordell & Cordell. There are many life changes that can happen after divorce that make it difficult or impossible to uphold requirements of your divorce decree. The orders issued in a divorce are based on the facts presented at that time, but the circumstances used in issuing those orders can obviously change. If you feel a modification to your court orders might be necessary, talk to us at Cordell & Cordell.
Contact CordellCordell.com. 1065 East Hillsdale Boulevard, Suite 310, Foster City, California, 94404.
Two, the Pelicans are 7-6. Ollie, this is the win we thought we got on opening night against the Rockets, isn't it?
Yeah, this is that team that kind of took the world by storm that we've been waiting to see since really that first week. Well, maybe the first two games, really, because they did kind of drop off in the other two. But yeah, Preston, I don't know what to say. This Toronto Raptors team, I legitimately gave them, you know, I hate to say it, close to 0% chance of winning tonight, especially when you heard about Elford being out, Nikola being out. And you know what? They haven't been playing their best ball. Despite winning these last two games, we saw plenty of mistakes. I mean, sitting there with David up in the press row, we talked about it consistently, that these guys didn't resemble that team we saw in the first week. But you know what? It's amazing how they can flip a switch or have this extra gear. And they've waited until now to show it. And I just noticed this, guys. The Pelicans won every single quarter tonight against the Raptors, the best team in the league through the first month of the season. That says a ton.
That's Ali Cosell. He's the editor-in-chief of TheBirdRights.com. Follow him at Ali Cosell. Grubb, you're kind of our effort doctor here on the Bird Calls podcast. And what did you – obviously, you had a tweet out saying that you – or maybe I just heard you saying this before we started the pod. The defense started. It was crisp from the opening tip, and it just kind of continued throughout all four quarters.
That was the best thing about this whole performance was the consistency of the defense. They kept Toronto from getting to the spots that they wanted to offensively. They made ball, they denied the ball to players, and they closed out on passes. I mean, they just frustrated every passer, whether it was Van Vliet or whether it was Kyle Lowry or whether it was Kawhi Leonard trying to create space for other people. They just weren't a lot of options. And then when they were able to get the ball inside, there were two Pelicans coming and closing out well. And that's something that we hadn't always seen. We'd seen some closeouts. Either they were too hard or they jumped too early and people were able to get shots. And tonight they were extremely disciplined in their defense. And then the effort just in staying with their men, even when they weren't rebounding the ball particularly well in the first half, they stayed with it. And there wasn't this kind of freelancing that you have seen at times from the Pelicans defensively, where guys didn't stick with their assignments, rolled off too fast, ran out to a shooter that they weren't responsible for. Tonight, every quarter was generally a solid defensive effort. And when it wasn't, it was usually because the offense had made a mistake.
That's David Grubb of Crescent City Sports, and we've got a fun announcement about him a little bit later in the podcast. Kevin, I'm going to let you address the backcourt. 59 combined points from Jrue Holiday and Etuan Moore. And as I said, Jrue Holiday kept Kyle Lowry from getting his first bucket until the 340 mark. And I'm going to go straight to our questions before we talk a little bit more about the game. This one's from Tom Hickson. Jrue Holiday, I think, held Zach LaVine and Devin Booker to 13 of 38 from the field. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but Kyle Lowry started out 0-7, and he finished the night 1 of 9. Is Jrue Holiday a top 15 player right now, Kevin?
He's playing like it for sure. He's been our best player so far this season consistently. You know, he started off a little bit slow scoring-wise to start the year, but it wasn't like he was struggling. It was more like he was deferring and just taking what was given. Now he's aggressive mode, and it's just been incredible. And yeah, you can't say enough about him and enough about the way Etuan played tonight also. He was great. And to piggyback off what Grubb was just saying, I mean, even the bench didn't falter defensively. You know, they, you know, guys like Cech, who sometimes overrun things or react too fast. I mean, he had little lapses here and there, but I mean, they held it down. You know, everybody was very disciplined, and it was the best team performance we've seen so far this year for sure.
The worst plus minus on the night was Ian Clark in 21 minutes with a negative one. That's how good the Pelicans were from top to bottom tonight. Ali, I want to expand on Etuan Moore, because the Pelicans, when they've been successful, there's been somebody who's come out hot in the first quarter. Typically, it's been Nikola Mirotic this season, sometimes Julius Randle. Tonight, it was Etuan Moore. I think he had 17 points in the first quarter, or maybe it was in the first half, but he had 30 points tonight, his biggest night of the season thus far, plus 21 on the night. He was unstoppable, 13 of 18 from the field, 3 of 5. That three-point shot that's got him somewhere around 50% on the year, it was 47% heading into tonight. Those guys are biting on the pump fake every single time as they approach him, and he's taking advantage of it, getting into the paint, getting those easy runners that he's so fluid at. Ali, talk about Etuan Moore's performance tonight.
He absolutely set the tone. You know, Anthony Davis started the game off with that tough jumper fadeaway. But after that, I felt like the scoring and just the game in general almost became like
This is the not-for-sale Kia 14 drift car.
Hold on. Oh, my God. Sorry about that, guy.
That was a nice
cameo. And all of a sudden, the video starts playing. But like I was saying, set the tone. And I felt like then suddenly that rubbed off on Jrue Holiday and the rest of the guys. Somehow, some way, Etuan was able to get into the paint exclusively in that first quarter. He wasn't selling for jumpers. I think he took maybe one or two threes that entire first quarter, but everything else came inside the paint. And, you know, the Raptors are a vaunted defense where they've got serious length, serious athleticism, and they give all sorts of problems to everybody else in the league so far. And I've caught a few of their games. So for Etuan to be able to do that at his size and just get off all these shots, knock everything down, it's a testament to him. He just doesn't get talked enough about, even by us. And I know that Kevin and you, Preston, talk about him quite a bit. And there's a few others that are always tooting his horn. But I think, honestly, we've got to raise our game even that much more, because tonight I feel like without Etuan Moore, the Pelicans don't win this game. You need to always have somebody set the tone early in these close matchups against really good teams. And Etuan did that. And then to start the third quarter, he kind of vanished, but it wasn't through his fault. He just wasn't getting any shots. But once he got it going again, wow. Then he suddenly poured in another 13 points. So impressive performance, Preston.
I forgot to mention the question about Jrue Holiday being a top 15 player. That was from Tom Hickson, and that answer was given to you by Kevin Berrios. You can follow him at Kevin B for Bounce of thebirdrights.com. I've got the numbers thanks to Will Guillory: 15 points per game, 2 rebounds, 2.3 assists per game, 56% from the field, 49% from three-point range on the season. That's Etuan Moore. I'm going to go over to Grubb. I want you to address one of these two players. Of course, Jrue Holiday. We can't say enough about him. 29 points, 14 assists on the night. But I kind of want to go to another ho-hum player who could there be a quieter 17.12 rebound performance and with 4 assists than the one we got from Julius Randle tonight, Grubb?
Well, I think that's the effectiveness of Julius, is that you don't have to, you know, run plays for him. You don't have to, his game doesn't require a lot of setup. And he can be effective whether he's getting the ball directly or in his hands, or if he's getting it indirectly off of rebounds or second chances, or you know, or just being the guy who's there for a dump off. And his consistency has been vital. You know, obviously with Nico being out, and he was averaging a double double before he's missed these last two games, 20 and 10 every night. You know, somebody has to step up, and you put Julius into the starting lineup. Not only has he played outstanding basketball these last two games, he's playing heavy minutes, which is something that we were worried about at the beginning of the season, considering the plantar fasciitis that he's dealing with. And he hasn't complained a bit, and his effort hasn't dipped in the slightest. You can see he's not doesn't have the greatest lift on a night-to-night basis, but he's there. And his effort and just his ability to be that rock near the paint, to not be afraid to give the hard foul when it's necessary. You know, they need that guy to be an enforcer, and that's what he was brought in to do. And he does his work. I mean, Julius, you know, it's that's the thing that's been frustrating about being 7-6 is that there are guys who have been consistent every night, but it's the inconsistency of those that small group of players that has been so frustrating. But Julius has not been one of those guys. He's been consistent from opening tip of the first game, and you know, he's you could talk about how many of these guys are unsung right now, and Julius is certainly another guy who in the league is not going to get talked about a lot because of there's so much drama. And he's just being effective every night.
All right, we've got a lot of questions, so I'm going to go ahead and get starting and just let the conversation kind of start free-flowing. Kevin, this one's from Clint White. I know there's going to be a lot of questions. Obviously, there are five men in the starting rotation. There aren't just four. And the fifth guy tonight, again, was Wes Johnson. He had the lowest plus-minus of the group at plus four in just 21 minutes. He picked up four quick fouls, but he was solid. He's a confident player. He takes that shot when it's available to him. He had that nice dribble drop step on the three-point line, taking those good looks. Sometimes they were going in, sometimes they weren't. I think he finished 2 for 6 on the night. Here it is, 1 of 4 from 3-point range. But he just, that position just needs to offer the threat, the scoring semblance of something that facilitates the defense to at least recognize that there is a fifth member of the Pelicans team on the floor at all times. That's not something they were necessarily getting with Solomon Hill in the lineup and with Elfrid Payton out of the lineup. Talk about what you've seen from Wes Johnson. And directly, here's a question from Clint White. Do you think he stays in the starting lineup once Elfrid Payton returns, or is this going to be a matchup scenario going forward where you keep Etuan Moore in that position?
You know, it's a tough question. You know, I like Wes Johnson playing there. Obviously, I'm a huge Etuan Moore fan, so like I like Etuan on the court. But I think having Wes Johnson there allows for Drew to play against the best smaller guard, and you still have somebody adequate to play against, you know, the wing, which we never really had. And I just think, you know, the question becomes maybe also, does Payton return to the starting lineup with Drew being so confident on the ball and so capable lately? You know, could you see Payton come off the bench and have more play, more of that two role to start with? That could be something that could change. I'm not sure. I don't think there's really a wrong answer here because we have so many good players. You know, I mean, Wesley Johnson's not an amazing player, but he's an NBA player. And he will fill that role and provide something and allow sort of like trickle down defense and defensive improvement. You know, like I don't think trickle down economics works, but trickle down defensive rotations and assignments help because you have guys that can guard positions they're more suited to guard. Etuan doesn't have to worry about that bigger cover. Drew can stay on the smaller guy, you know, and that improves defense across the board. And Wesley Johnson's not, you know, a negative defender, and he also can hit the open shot and also does the other little small things. He's a little bit of a hustle guy. He can get rebounds. He blocks shots sometimes. He can hit the open three. He can cut, you know, so he earned minutes. And then also, of course, even if Moore goes to the bench or Payton goes to the bench, they're still going to get the same amount of minutes because, you know, it's just how they get staggered and who they play with. So I don't necessarily think there's a wrong answer. And so I don't care what Gentry does so much when that happens, because I think we're in a good situation. We're going to have at least two very serviceable guys coming off the bench no matter what the decision is. So I like it, and I wouldn't worry about that too much. I mean, obviously what we saw from Elfrid Payton in the first four games was incredible, so I don't know about sending him to the bench, but I do like more being able to play the two a lot more than the three. So there's that. I don't know. I guess I didn't really answer the question, but I just think there's really no wrong answer. And if it is matchup based, then that's also fine with me. I mean, you know, I kind of like when we dictate our style to the other team. I like that aggressiveness coaching wise, but I wouldn't argue with that if like a team, you know, if you're sticking with their original lineup, but then there's a matchup, say with Golden State or, you know, like tonight against Toronto, where you got a premier small forward with some size and you want to start out with Wesley at the three, you know, that makes a lot of sense. So whatever.
Yeah, there's no need to apologize. It's a difficult question to answer, and that's why I'm going to continue this round robin. We're going to go over to Ali. The Raptors are the fourth best offensive rated team in the NBA, and the Pelicans held them to somewhere around 40% shooting from the field. Midway through the fourth, it was somewhere around 35%. I'm doing this from memory, so apologize for the numbers. But that's what Wes Johnson does. When he takes over those minutes, he allows Jrue Holiday to go to his more normal position, locking down those backcourt scorers like the guys we just mentioned, Zach LaVine, Devin Booker, and Kyle Lowry, to name just a few. And that's what Wes Johnson does for you. Not to say that Elfrid Payton couldn't also too limit those guys, but it's just Jrue Holiday's game, and Wes Johnson facilitates that. So, Ali, what is your premonition of what the Pelicans are going to do going forward once all these guys are healthy?
Oh, man, like Kevin said, it's a tough choice, and it's probably not a wrong answer on paper until you finally get to see these guys play. But I think I would stay with Wesley Johnson. I think what I love seeing out there is Wesley can pick up and be the primary defender, one of the main scorers for the opponents. And that is either locking up Kawhi Leonard like we saw tonight, or in previous games, I saw him take his turns with both Devin Booker and Zach LaVine. So it gives Jrue Holiday a breather. It also gives him an opportunity to have, and the Pelicans have more length. That the guy's got good instincts. That's all there is to it. He's athletic. He's quick. He's got great reach. He knows this league. He's been around forever and has played on some very good teams. So I just like everything he brings to the table. And I feel like right now it's more important to have his defense than it is, say, each one's offense. Again, it hurts me to say this because we just saw one of the best performances I've ever seen out of a non-star by a Pelicans player in the last 10 years. And each one, I mean, deserves applause up and down. So it's hard to talk about him being moved to the reserve role, but I think that's what honestly Alvin Gentry should do. I think it's important for this team to set that defensive identity, which we haven't seen. That's a reason why they're ranked in the bottom third of the league in defensive rating. So I think that's where you got to start. If you're trying to improve this team and how best to have them move up the ladder, it's on that side of the ball. So Wesley Johnson, I guess you get to start the three.
Grubb, we've seen a couple of guys come to the Pelicans who've given them a nice jolt for a few weeks. Guys like Emeka Okafor, Jordan Crawford, Quinn Cook, Tim Frazier, Luke Babbitt, Norris Cole, that sort of thing. That's what I'm doing off the top of my head. But a lot of those guys couldn't sustain long-term with the Pelicans. Do you think Wesley Johnson can do this for, I don't know what it is, the remaining like 65 games this season? Is he somebody who can do this for the remainder of the year at, I want to say, the age of 31?
Well, I mean, you know, the expectations for Wesley are not that he has to come in and save anything. It's just be dependable. Like, you know, if they, you know, that was the thing for Emeka Okafor. It wasn't like he was pulling down a double-double every night, but you knew what you were going to get for those 15 to 20 minutes that he was on the floor. And that's what Wesley is right now. With Solomon Hill, there were just those, you know, either it was a flat line or there would be every once in a while, you know, a crescendo. But for Wesley, it's been basically since he inserted himself since he was inserted into the starting lineup, you've seen the defense become so much better because it stabilized the perimeter. And I think he can continue to do that. Defense is about intellect and effort, and you don't forget those things. Now, if you're asking him to come out and score double figures every night, then no, he's probably going to disappoint you. But like they said, the biggest thing is that he's shooting the ball with confidence. And if people believe you're going to take the shot when it comes to you, they have to respect you. They have to defend you. And that creates space for Etuan to maneuver without the basketball. That creates space for AD to work. It creates space for Julius to get into the post. It creates space for Jrue to drive to the basket. And that's what they need out of that small forward position. And I don't see Wes Johnson losing his confidence in his shot. You saw a couple tonight that you probably like that. Those were overconfident shots, but at least he was out there taking them. And I think that's what they've been missing from their other small forwards for the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, definitely a dominant performance by the Pelicans tonight. Just one statistic to look at: the Toronto Raptors allow 45 points in the paint. The Pelicans truly played their game tonight. They had 72 on the night. They dominated in pretty much every facet, 30 assists to just 22. They out-rebounded the Raptors by 11. That was a concern we had with Ibaka and Siakam in the starting lineup. Just three-pointers, 37%, 55% from the field overall. The Raptors at 40%. I don't know what else there is to add to this, Kevin, other than the Pelicans truly played the best basketball that we've seen from them all season long, and they're not even relatively at full health. Elfrid Payton and Nikola Mirotic, two starters who should come back at some point this week. They're both kept out by ankles right now, but the rumor has been that they could be activated at any time. Can the Pelicans get better with these two guys back in the lineup, Kevin? Obviously, this is the best performance we've seen thus far without the two of them. What are the Pelicans going to be like when they're back?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, you add better players to the mix. You don't have to rely so much on Ian Clark, who, you know, he's serviceable, but he doesn't ever wow me. He's my biggest concern on the bench, I think. But I wish Darius would also learn a little bit from Etuan Moore with his pump fakes and driving off the and trying to get to the middle, try to get a little bit of a floater game or a mid-range game, because he could be a lot more effective and we could see more like, you know, double-digit 10, 12-point games consistently from him coming off the bench, which would help. But bringing Nikola back, who we've seen how amazing he's been to start the year, and even when his shot's off, what he contributes with cutting, rebounding, and he's a very, you know, he's a much more versatile defender than I think most people thought, especially I thought when he came over. Like, I was very happy we got him, but he surprised me on the defensive end. So that's also going to help. You don't have to rely on other guys that, you know, like Darius could get less minutes now, especially with Wes Johnson providing that defensive spark. And then you have the shooting from, Mirotić back, and then you have Payton back creating plays and defending. You know, getting those two guys back help offensively a lot, but they also help tremendously on the defensive end. And rebounding. I mean, Elfrid Payton's a very good rebounder. And to comment on something that you just said, it's amazing that the Pelicans sort of out-rebounded the Raptors, considering they didn't really box out much. You know, like they did that without even boxing out that well tonight. It's just athleticism and effort, grabbing loose balls and just eyeing it up, but not really using your body. So if they really start to commit to boxing out, then, you know, it's going to be trouble for opponents. And I think that's something that Mirotić helps with, because he does box out pretty well. AD sometimes doesn't, and Cech, he doesn't know what a box out is, but Cech's effort tonight, you know, he's had that good energy Cech season so far. You know, he had a very rough summer league, very rough preseason, but he's that positive energy that he's bringing off the bench is reminiscent of what we saw last season, where we all fell in love with him when he was blocking shots and just running the floor. So that's great to see. So, I mean, I think, you know, while they may not replicate the sort of performance they had tonight, I think overall this team is going to, you know, really, really be a lot more consistent. I mean, we didn't even see like a dominant game from Anthony Davis. He kind of had a quiet game because he was getting outshined by Holiday and Etuan Moore. So when you bring all of these players back, as long as there's no ego issues, which I don't think there will be, you know, sky's the limit, really. I mean, we saw what happened the first four games before injuries derailed things, and now we're starting to bounce back, and we're going to get those other guys back. And, you know, it's going to be very exciting. We're going to get to go to Minnesota and take on a team that's trying to integrate new parts next. And, you know, that's a great, you know, way to take advantage of that team there as well.
Yeah, 25 points, 20 rebounds, 6 assists in a game where Anthony Davis, like you said, was largely quiet. He had 20 shots on the night, but he was kind of reduced to an elite rim runner with how productive Jrue Holiday and Etuan Moore were on the night. And Julius Randle was the guy crashing to the glass. And to expand on Julius Randle, Ollie, this is a bit of an interesting situation, because we saw Randle was limited early in the year due to that plantar fasciitis, and he was playing somewhere around 25 minutes per game. He played 35 minutes per game. Nikola Mirotić is going to come back at some point. He's playing really well, and the guys do two things very differently, but it helps it helps space the Pelicans' offense. Nikola Mirotić with his deep game, and Julius Randle, when the offense seemingly isn't working, he just takes the ball to the basket, and it usually works for him. How does Alvin Gentry going forward decide between the two of these guys, not just in the starting lineup, but how does he break up their minutes?
Well, it's a good problem to have, huh? I mean, I've always been an advocate to see Julius Randle in the starting lineup for a lot of the reasons that we've seen in these last two games. I feel like you need to have a bulldog in the inside the paint on both ends of the floor, whether it's grabbing a rebound or just trying to just shove your mass in front of an opponent, something that Anthony Davis just doesn't do, and he doesn't need to. Let's face it, he can get away with using his frame and his athleticism, and he doesn't need to be bumping up against guys and risking further injury. So I kind of like seeing that guy out there with AD, especially against the starters. So it's a man. I don't know how to answer because it's just two very different players. I'm so sorry.
That's two. That's two.
I know, man. Anytime I change and look at some other box score, then I go back, it resets the stupid thing. So anyways, I think one reason that we were able to get away with Julius Randle and the starters performing so well tonight is because Drew provided that perimeter shooting early with Etuan Moore. And so you need to have a couple of guys out there. If it's just Etuan Moore out there that's going to provide that spacing, I don't think that the Pelicans are going to win long-term like that. So I think the right answer is you stick with Nikola Mirotić because he does possess enough versatility. He can take care of the rebounding on the glass on both ends of the floor. So, but I just like the way it seems like this team just moves and functions better and quicker with Randle out there. So again, Preston, I mean, there's no right answer here. Alvin Gentry's got a good, you know, good option going with either way. But, you know, I think he probably should stick with Nikola Mirotić because in the long term, it's proven successful, as we saw last year. He provides that perimeter shooting. And you know what? Randle's gotten used to that off-the-bench kind of role. So, you know, I guess just keep rolling with that.
Yeah, it almost doesn't matter at this point with the Pelicans playing defense the way that they did tonight. We can talk all night about how good they were offensively. Everybody just had a great night. They broke down the defense and everything seemingly worked. But if they continue playing defense the way that they did tonight, that's what's going to take them to the next level. Grubb, why don't we continue with that line of thought and just quickly get your thought on what do you think Gentry's move is going to be with those two big men?
Well, I think he's going to keep the rotation, you know, unless there's something, you know, wrong with Nico that requires him to come off the bench. I think he's going to go back to his original rotation because it was working. I think Elfrid is the one that's the most likely to face possibly moving to the bench upon his return. But Nico, and I think Ollie's right, having that flexibility of having a guy who can both space the floor with his shooting and score in the post. We've seen him, you know, we've seen Nico score off movement. We've seen Nico score on the block. And we've seen him rebound on both ends and be effective at doing that. I don't take that out of your starting lineup, especially if you don't have a real consistent shooter at the three. If even with Wes out there, you know, that's a threat of a shot. But Nico is a shot, you know, all the time. He's going to take them. And we know that Etuan at times, depending on matchups, can have difficulty getting his shot off. So, you know, to have Nico out there, I think, is the most beneficial thing. And then especially when you bring Randle in with that second unit, again, he's not a guy you have to run plays for. So when he gets the ball in the second unit, he can either drive to the basket immediately, but he can get just as many points and be just as effective when the other guys are getting their shots. When Darius Miller's putting up a shot, Randle can be there to get those offensive boards and score and get to the foul line against lesser players on those second units. He's so effective in drawing contact that I really like the fact that he does come in with that second unit, and he's still going to get starter minutes anywhere. So starting isn't as important as who's finishing and who's getting the bulk of the minutes, and they'll all get their fair share of minutes.
All right,
hey, that's a better question. Let's talk about who finishes, you know, because we can talk about starters at length, but it doesn't really matter as much as who finishes, huh? Kevin or Preston, you guys want to take that?
Well, out of
the two big maybe with Elfrid?
I think that's just game by game basis. You know, you feel out who's having the better game and what you need. If you need scoring, you need playmaking, or you need defending, and then you roll that way. I don't think there necessarily has to be a set finishing five, just as much as I don't think there has to be a set starting five. You know, I mean, that's my take on it. I don't know if Preston, you feel differently.
Yeah, I think matchup-based. We've seen him pull Nikola Mirotic out of the closing five in many instances and insert Julius Randle or go small in that instance if they need offense. But I do think it is a critical decision in the first quarter, just because you see how the Pelicans play with a bit more swagger when they come out with an early lead, and you see them just play their game, race out to, you know, to these 30-30. I think they scored 30 points in every quarter except for the second quarter where they led 28-7. But this jolt of momentum that gets them out of the gate, usually it carries through the end of the game. We don't see them forfeit these great leads all too often, at least in an early sample size. They're just 7-7 sitting here early on in the regular season. But I do like the scoring penchant because it does feel like the guys thrive off that. So whoever you think that is, if you think Julius Randle gives you that, we've seen him score, you know, 10 points in his first 8 minutes in several instances. We've seen Nikola Mirotic with 15 points in the first quarter. Whoever's going to add that offensive firepower from the opening tip, I think that's the guy that you have to go with, whichever guy you think is going to do that on a consistent basis.
Yeah, that's cool. But all right, let's talk about Elford now, because I did pick up on David saying that he thinks, or he wouldn't mind seeing Elford be the one that, or he sees him being the one that loses out on that starting role when once everybody's healthy. I'm of the opinion that Elford should continue to start, because we all want to see Jrue Holiday kind of stay off the ball and kind of lessen his load overall, and then Wesley get minutes at the three if it's still working. What about you guys? How do you see it all, you know, kind of resolving itself, the situation, once, and knock on wood, everybody's healthy? Who would you like to see among those three starting?
Let's do Grubb first.
Well, I think Etuan is best suited coming off the bench. I would probably, you know, have my preference would be to have Etuan as a sixth man, because then you really have two guys on your bench who are capable of scoring 20 plus in Etuan and Randall, which is a really exciting thing to have on your second unit. It really depends on the mindset of Elfrid Payton, and I think I do worry about the fragile nature of his mind. Maybe not that he's a weak person, but that he's just starting to get his confidence with the way he was playing at the beginning of the season, and he may not take to a reserve role very well at this point. You may need him out there in the beginning to get him going, and Etuan has shown that he doesn't really need a push to get going, like being a starter. I think he could come off the bench and do his thing regardless. So I guess I would prefer to see Etuan coming off the bench. But again, it's about the minutes and it's about closing. And I'm pretty sure that, you know, Etuan will see a lot of end of game situations.
I'm going to jump in here. I think I like Elfrid Payton coming off the bench, and I've made that clear since the offseason, just because I like him managing the offense. I like him having the ball in his hands. And I think Etuan Moore does something for the Pelicans starting five that Elfrid Payton cannot do. Obviously, Elfrid Payton sets those guys up, but Etuan Moore spaces the floor for them. He gives Jrue Holiday and Anthony Davis the room they need to get into the paint, to get those easy buckets. Obviously, Elfrid Payton does a great job at facilitating for them, setting up those easy baskets. But Etuan Moore at the three-point line, whenever the offense breaks down and they're struggling to shoot, you know that you can kick it out to him. He can draw attention. Everybody's going to bite on that pump. He's going to draw into the floor, and he's going to find either Julius Randle or Anthony Davis. Now, that's something that he might not necessarily be able to do to his strongest suits on the bench. You're going to have the defense keying on him just a little bit more because they don't have the threat of, let's say, an Anthony Davis under the rim. You're obviously going to have somebody helping him in either Julius Randle or Nikola Mirotic. But Etuan Moore needs that space. He needs the other offensive players to draw attention so that he can do what he does best. He'll still be a good player off the bench, but I just think Elfrid Payton is better suited to play with the bench and to lead the unit because that's what he does. He sets up the offense and he facilitates.
I kind of agree with both of you a little bit, but I think I agree more with Grubb just because I think that you have what he said about Elfrid is very true. You know, he's the guy who's struggled throughout his early part of his career and has been in bad situations. So to give him, you know, a demotion in a way might set him back confidence wise when we saw how great he was playing. And then, you know, don't discount how great his penetrating ability was and how much he was able to create off of that and also score by getting to the bucket. So that was a big thing. And then if you take – and you have to remember – but I understand what you're saying about the spacing that Etuan provides. But you have to remember that Mirotic will be in the lineup as well. And then Wes Johnson is also you know, a confident shooter, as we also discussed already. So it's not like, you know, they have scrubs out there that their defense doesn't have to worry about. Like, you know, you're not putting Solomon Hill out there where somebody can play, you know, 10 feet off of him and beg him to shoot the three. So I get that. But I also really like the idea of Randall being flanked by Etuan and Darius, you know, having him with two shooters around him that he can kick out to, or, you know, or just feast on their misses, you know, get putbacks, work around the basket, those sort of things. I think that works. But also, you know, we're talking about this like it's going to be, you know, five players subbed out, five players subbed in, which it's not going to be really. I mean, I know you guys don't think that way. It just sounds like it the way we're talking about it. So all of these guys are going to be intermingled and intertwined and playing with each other. So that's why I think it doesn't really matter, because we have about, you know, 8 to 9 guys that I think now are very competent and are competent enough. You know, I mean, I still have my doubts about Darius. He's playing okay, but I would still like to see a lot more of him. I think he's the weakest of the guys that gets the biggest amount of minutes at the moment. And I don't really trust Ian Clark to have staying power much. I really wish we could replace him with like a little bit better of a ball handler on the second unit. But other than that, you know, having these guys that are interchangeable parts is great. So it there's really, like I said in the previously, there's no wrong answer, but I do like the idea of having Randall flanked with two shooters. It's a lot like, you know, how those two thrived off of having Boogie down low and his playmaking ability. So I think that could be a good formula for success. And you look at, you know, I feel like you could sell it to Etuan better than you could sell it to Alfred. You'd be like, look, you are the Lou Williams of this team. And, you know, there's nothing, you know, Lou Williams is a great player and he has that bench role and he's a dominant player and he'll come in and score 20 to 30 points a night for the Clippers. And that's the kind of play we could get out of Etuan, especially, you know, tell him, look, you don't have to bang with bigger players. You're able to guard guys your size. You're going to have guys your size guarding you. So I just think it will make life easier for him. And, you know, you'll see more nights like tonight with him being that secondary, that second unit scorer.
Just to wrap up this debate. We're talking about
a win, and I'm sorry, Preston, I just have to say this. We're talking about a win, talking about a Pelicans team that really came back and showed us something that we haven't seen since the first week. When the dominant news over the last 48 hours was Jimmy Butler. I mean, had they lost to the Raptors, would we have talked about Jimmy Butler more than at least half of this program?
I don't think so. I think we were all against the Jimmy Butler trade. In the offseason, I thought Etuan Moore, Nikola Mirotic made sense. But like Grubb will tell you in a second, just what those guys do, taking them off the floor and sending them to Minnesota while you bring in Jimmy Butler, that takes away two, you know, key rotation pieces that the Pelicans then wouldn't have, right, Grubb?
Yeah, I don't think the answer would have been having less depth and adding a guy who holds the ball. You know, you're basically trying to add what I would consider now to be a lesser version of Drew Holiday. You know, they're both 29 years old. They're both, you know, reputations have been built on defense and being able to, you know, score as well. But Butler is a guy who's not a great shooter from the perimeter. And we've talked about his injury history before. And now you add in what is the way that he handled himself in Minnesota, and you would add that to this locker room. Man, I see that as being just something that would have been a colossal failure. You would have given up assets for a guy that wouldn't have stayed beyond this season, because I don't think there would have been a decent enough playoff run to entice him to stay. And then you'd have been overpaying for a guy who's on the wrong side of his career. He's not in the shape that Drew Holiday's in physically to be able to go out there and play the kinds of minutes on both ends and be a dominant player anymore, I don't think. I think Jimmy Butler is a very good player, but he's not the kind of player that I would give up, you know, what the Minnesota was asking for from the Pelicans. No, wouldn't have made sense.
All right, let's go ahead and move on. Just to wrap that up, we do anticipate that the starting lineup is going to stay Elfrid Payton, Drew Holiday, Etuan Moore, Nikola Mirotic, and AD, right?
Yeah, I think he'll probably roll that back out, you know, see how it goes.
All right, let's go over to Kevin because I think he hasn't talked in a second. Obviously, this was a great victory.
Hey, I haven't talked to him. I've been asking the questions, but that's all right.
All right, let's throw this over to Ali because I actually do have two kidding. Special questions no, just I'm for Kevin. No, you spoke up. It's too late now. This is from Mon Christian. Obviously, this is a big victory, but the Pelicans start out 4-0, then they went 0-6, and now they're 3-0. How do you feel about the Pelicans season so far after everything that's transpired?
Well, if I'm allowed to pick a point along that little roller coaster, then there you've got the answer. Happy, sad, and happy again. Honestly, I think that everybody should know and understand by now that a lot of everything we've seen is really dependent on the Pelicans' health. They start off the season, of course, finally coming out of a preseason with everybody ready, everybody healthy. There was no kind of, you know, any rehabs, anybody dealing with family issues, any kind of crises like that. So they, and of course, they got off to a great start, but then, of course, we lose our starting point guard, and then Anthony Davis suffered an injury, and all of a sudden, you know, everybody else seemingly is dealing something. Julius Randle with his plantar fasciitis, and then everybody starts twisting ankles. So it was just troubling, but then again, you've got to realize the record. You've got to realize that you're suddenly going on the road against the toughest teams really out there. And so getting a win, just even getting one win, is a tough ask. So you had to kind of take it with a grain of salt, but it's hard to. You know, guys, when you see six straight losses, five straight losses, you kind of see players slumping their shoulders a little bit in the games. You know, it's just invariable that you start to lose a little bit of hope or you know, you come down to that wave or that high of what you thought this Pelicans team might be. But again, seemingly they've kind of corrected track, and you know, they had two easy wins. Granted, they didn't play their best ball, like I've already mentioned, against the Bulls and the Suns, but this one against the Raptors, wow, it should just again have everybody exploding with euphoria, simply because we are missing two very key pieces, and the Pelicans defense has not been great, and everybody has been asked to play out of position at times. So for them to be able to go up to Toronto and just really, I thought they manhandled Toronto. Outside of the first 6 minutes where Toronto was really dominating the Pelicans on the offensive glass, they were the ones out in the fast break and, of course, pushing the issue off of turnovers. Outside of that, the Pelicans then really dominated with their style of play where they really cleaned it up. I know that we had a couple of those troubled turnover stretches in the second half, but again, you know, hats off to these guys to be able to bounce back after both timeouts where they went on runs of their own. And, you know, it never got closer within, I think, 6 points, right? So, you know, I can't say enough about it. And that's why I think should be the lasting impression. You should really take what you saw tonight, because the Pelicans have not been playing up to par. And there were reasons for it, as I've just mentioned. So as a whole, you should still be thinking that this is a playoff team you're watching, and that there's a good chance that they can be more, depending on how how everything comes together, how the rotations come together. Can the players stay healthy? What other moves Dale Demps can make? Because I think we're all in agreement here. But instead of a small forward like the fan base has been clamoring for years, how about getting a decent backup point guard? Because anytime we have to give Tim Frazier the responsibility or Ian Clark, you know, things kind of fall apart. And Drew Holiday hasn't been, honestly, the best ball distributor until these last few games, as I was talking with David Grubb before we started the podcast. So I think that's the biggest key. They still got a few holes to fill up. But once they do, wow, we can play with anybody.
Yeah, definitely. I'm in 100% agreement. Ish Smith, Mijoš Teodosic, Pat Beverly, Tomas Satoransky, a couple of names that come to mind that could be available. Kevin, I've got a special request question to you, and then I've got some rotation questions for Grubb. This one is from Tejeda. He said, not sure if you saw Wes pump fake last game, but who has the more confident pump fake, Wes or Luke Babbitt?
Nobody has a more confident pump fake than Luke Babbitt. Not even Markel Fultz at the free throw line. Like.
Okay, let's give you a follow-up. That one was short and sweet. Finn says, what's the ceiling this season? And also, more specifically to Kevin, what's your opinion of the bench so far? I know that we've done this. We've covered this pretty well, but what is your overall perspective on guys like Darius Miller, Tim Frazier, and Ian Clark's performances?
Well, I think we need to find a way to replace minutes to Ian Clark and Tim Frazier. That's the main thing. Like we just talked about, another ball handler, another, it doesn't have to be a pure point guard, but a better combo guard would help. And maybe a guy who has size like Satoransky or Tyrone Wallace, you know, who could play multiple positions for you. that would be, you know, a great kind of fit. Or even a guy like Jonathan Simmons, who could handle the ball a little bit, would improve, you know, on that wing and give you some more size and defensive effort on the second unit. But I mean, the bench, when you talk about, you know, I want to take this moment, because we already talked about the bench a lot, but I want to take this moment to talk a little bit about Julius Randle, because, you know, after the first couple of games, when he started to deal with that plantar fascia, I saw a lot of fans turn on him really quickly. And I thought it was, it was unfair, because as somebody who's had plantar fascia before, and all I do is bartend, like, it was a nightmare. It hurts so bad. Your mind is totally focused on just the pain you're feeling constantly. So I can't imagine, like, trying to run up and down a court and jump and play basketball with that kind of injury. And so he had like a little bit of a rough stretch, and we saw him sort of revert to like the bad Boogie Ball. And I saw people talk about trading him or like criticizing him. But the whole time I was thinking, this guy has plantar fascia, and that is so tough to deal with. And I can't even fathom how he's out there on the court right now. And now we see he's off the injury report, so I have to assume it's healed. And in the last few games, he's looked like a totally different player, and he's given you what you thought. So having that kind of talent on the bench is just unbelievable. And then now we're talking about maybe having Wes Johnson start and Etuan come off the bench. You pair those two on the bench, that's a solid top seven rotation right there. And if you could just get that one more piece and just have eight really good players, I think the league will be very scared of us. I mean, I think they're scared of us already, but they'll be really be a force to reckon with, because we won't have many holes. And I think that, like, we've all agreed upon multiple times in DMs and on this pod already, just getting another guy who's competent in handling the ball and be able to create a little bit for others would just really unlock that second unit.
All right, Grubb, you were talking earlier about defensive effort and all the difference it's made. This is from Tejeda. He said the defense and the defensive rotations the past two games have been really good. Who or what would you give credit to for the improvement?
Well, I think first of all, you give some credit to the fact that they were able to the opponents that they were able to play. Because I think that, you know, it helped to have the Bulls, you know, and the Suns come in and be able to see some success. And a lot of defense, again, to me, defense is about, you know, again, knowing your assignments and having that effort consistently through over the course of the game. And when you're starting to see success, it's easy to maintain effort. When you're playing in desperation, and the Pelicans were doing that consistently during the road trip, was that they were playing desperately on defense, you do get into bad habits. So when you start to get that lockdown mentality that they had during the second half of last season, when guys weren't, you know, getting into those bad positions, you start seeing what you saw tonight. And I think ultimately, you know, again, we talk about a defensive unit that your core group from last year was completely different than it is when you started this season. So we knew it was going to take time. And it's not over yet. There will probably be some more hiccups defensively before it gets to the point that we expect it to be. But you're seeing the potential of that Dell Demps saw and that Alvin Gentry saw before the season with this group on the defensive end. And I think it gets better from here. But I don't think there's been a magic switch. I think it's just guys are starting to see that if they stick to what they're supposed to do. And I think inserting Wes was important, but he wasn't the key. It's a group mentality. And part of it was Anthony Davis needed to get his energy up, and he's, but Drew Holiday's played the same defense from game one to game 13. You know, Etuan Moore is not going to change defensively who he is. It was really just, you had those injuries, you had this new group picking up different roles, and now it's starting to settle some, and the schedule is starting to become a little bit more favorable. I think they have the potential to be even better than this defensively on a night-to-night basis. But there's been no magic bullet.
All right, let's get close to wrapping up. We've got a couple more questions. We'll get through them. Ali, first of all, who do you stick Drew Holiday on against Minnesota?
Ooh, that's a good one. I think you've got to go with Derrick Rose, simply because he's had a couple of really outstanding games over the last few weeks. And I know that Minnesota won tonight, and I I kind of glanced at the box score, and he had another nice game. So I think you got to put him on Derrick Rose. And then I know Jeff Teague is back, but I think it's more important to stop basically one of their scores and just let Cat or Anthony Davidson handle Cat. And so you're kind of covering your bases there.
All right, that was from Clint White. He also said, can we swap Okafors? Sorry, and I wish we could, but I think that ship has sailed. Let's go over to Grub. Obviously, we've talked a good bit about trade. We've got a lot of questions from Waka Waka Wakanda, Ron Ash, and Hot Pelicans Takes. They say, who should Dell Demps be monitoring as a potential trade partner? With the Pels open to trading Nico, what big-name players should we keep our eyes on? Bradley Beal was one that came up in his mentions. And the final one is, how soon do you think the Dell will attempt to swing a trade for a star or a good wing? Here are some of the names I came up with. Ish Smith, Mios, Beverly, Thomas Satoransky, possibly TJ Warrens, although I think it would take two first-round picks. They really like him, and he's a building block there. He's only 25, I think. CJ Miles is a dispensable player in Toronto. We saw him up close and personal tonight. And Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. Grub, do you have your eye on any specific players?
I like the role players that you're talking about. I don't think the Pelicans should be going all in for a star. You know, who's going to lose out? You know, who are you giving away? I don't think the Pelicans are seeking to get rid of Nico. I can't believe that would be the case. Now, obviously, he's in the last year of his contract, and he has the highest potential return, I would imagine, from the people who would be eligible to be traded. But considering that he hasn't even been with the team a year and they really don't know what the potential of this is, I think Dell is just doing due diligence at this point with some of those bigger names like a Jimmy Butler. You have to make the phone calls. You're derelict in duties if you're not just at least communicating with people when you know that players are available, because you want to gauge, what are my players worth? What do you think your players are worth? And I think that's a lot of what's going on right now. I think folks just need to be kind of calm and patient and not worry about, you know, Bradley Beal or John Wall or any of those kind of names, because you have, like we've continued to say, the top seven on this roster can compete with anybody. It's just filling out those roles and understanding that those other guys can be consistent enough on a night-to-night basis. But going after another star at this point just seems like a short-sighted move for a team that can't keep changing its core every few months. You can't have Alvin Gentry trying to coach a completely different team every half season and think that you're going to get continued success. It feels like you're trying to chase something, and that's not going to build any kind of lasting success as a team. Yeah, at some point, you got to decide who you are, who you're sticking with, and see if it works. This group has not done that yet.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm sure that another name will enter this conversation, but we won't know that name until teams really start to separate themselves as lottery dwellers and as contenders. As that kind of starts to break apart, the picture will become clearer. Kevin, let's end it on this. This is from our friend at NOLA Pelicans Reddit. He says, my arms are stuck in the air from cheering for Drew. How do I get them down?
Watch some Solomon Hill highlights. let me ask one question real quick, just because I thought of this. What do you guys think happens in Denver? I mean, not that I think Denver would make a trade with us, but I liked Monty Morris coming into last season. Like, when they got him, I thought he was going to be a decent player, and he's been playing very well. And then you're going to see soon Isaiah Thomas comes into the picture there once he's healthy. So do you think there's any possibility that they would move him, not necessarily to us, but to anybody else? Or would he be a player that you would be interested in?
The guy I've always had my eye on is Malik Beasley. He's a guy who's been getting a bit more run this season. I think he's very similar to an Etuan Moore type mold. He's a 3-and-D type player. He's very athletic, versatile, a try-hard type guy. Went to Florida State. He was very productive there in a short time. He's somebody who's going to be buried on the bench, because you mentioned Isaiah Thomas, but Will Barton is going to be on his way back, I think, in a month or so. So there's just not going to be any minutes to go around. All these guys are signed up long-term. In addition, Gary Harris, Jamal Murray, they're not going anywhere. There's just no place for Malik Beasley on this team. And they've got so many other players coming into the lineup. Trey Lyles has been really good. Michael Porter Jr. is going to be in the mix towards the end of the season, early on next season. Of course, you still have Paul Millsap, Tyler Lydon, Nikola Jokic. There's just not space for him in this lineup. You also mentioned Monte Morris. Ollie, who do you have your eye on?
I would love to get him, Kevin. I watched a little bit of the game where he had 10 assists and no turnovers. I heard some stat that Monte Morris has had, like, what is it, like 4 turnovers since the season started? Something ridiculous. So, yeah, I would love for him to be our backup point guard. But that said, there's no way they give him up, especially when you look at how they don't have a legitimate point guard as a starter. So I think that's a nice option for them off the bench, who maybe eventually will start stealing some minutes to close out games even for him. You know, I wouldn't be surprised because, as we know, usually close games kind of get tight and the offenses slow down, so you can't rely on that pace. And Denver, over the years, hasn't really fared well in close games. So if I'm them, I don't let him go at all, but I would love him.
Yeah, if he continues being productive, I would think Isaiah Thomas would be the moving piece there, because Monte Morris is on such a manageable contract right now. David, we've got a pretty cool announcement from you. Of course, you can follow these guys at Kevin B for Bounce, at Ali Cosell, and at DM Grubb. You've got something slated tomorrow morning, don't you?
Yeah. It's kind of becoming a little bit of a movement, a little cultural phenomenon. This past week was the 25th anniversary of the Wu-Tang Clan's debut album, Into the Wu-Tang, 36 Chambers. And it just felt like to me that it was just right that it kind of mixed with Drew Holiday and, you know, the headband wearing, karate references that folks have been making all season towards him. And it just needed things to kind of capture the imagination. And Drew Tang Clan kind of just fell in for me, and I loved the Wu. And over the last 2 years, I've become a full-on Drew Holiday convert. And he's, you know, entered into the imagination, I think, of New Orleans fans in a way that I don't think any of us predicted when he first arrived, 6 years ago. So, I think it's really exciting. It captures my love of music and my love of basketball. And I think people are looking for another thing to rally around with this team, and the Drew Tang Clan just might be it.
It's kind of interesting right now. Drew Holiday might not make the All-Star team in the Western Conference. He probably won't, but he might still make third-team All-NBA. He's been that good early on in this season. Ali, you've got a great piece today on thebirdwrites.com talking a bit about Drew Holiday. Why don't you tell our listeners a bit about that?
Oh, I don't need to talk about it. I mean, we all know Drew Holiday is the best defender in the NBA right now. So that's all it is. It's just Drew Holiday, basically. And I was thinking of what was the name of that movie where they stole the line for the video game Doom, where basically I'll swallow your soul. And so when I saw Drew Holiday hounding the hell out of everybody over the past few games, somehow that popped into my head. So I just turned it into a title. Then I decided to look up to see how he's fared against all the guys that he's primarily guarded in the first 12 games of the season. And you know what? He's shut them down. I know that's not a surprise to any one of us, but I think it's pretty impressive that he's pretty much held the competition, which includes 7 of the top 20 scorers in the NBA right now, to a combined 31% field goal percentage. That's just outstanding. So if this doesn't basically get him noticed, because voters notice you what you do early, and that way you're kind of in the news for the rest of the season. If this doesn't get him at least in the conversation for Defensive Player of the Year, I'm going to move for some kind of recount.
And that's very topical as I sit in Florida right now. By the way, I think the Swallow Your Soul reference was one of my favorite childhood movies, Army of Darkness. If anybody is a fan of the Evil Dead movies, I think that might have been what you were referencing, but I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, it was the second one. Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Kevin, do you want to wrap this up for us, bud?
Sure. I got a new dog and he's awesome. also, I guess you could go back, because this pretty relative to what we've been talking about today. I read an article about Wesley Johnson being in the starting lineup and how that, you know, affects things defensively, and how it makes life easier for Etuan. And you know, I didn't use the term in there, which I would have thought of it earlier, but, you know, trickle down defend economics or whatever. By, you know, letting Moore guard a 2 and Wesley guard a 3. Those things are there. So that article is there. And then, I don't know, I'll start on something soon tomorrow or something. I might look into seeing how we can improve that 7th and 8th spot. I'm in full-on agreement with Grubb that there is no need to chase stars, that we just need to solidify the last few spots in that room. And we'll be a force to reckon with, because we have 2 stars in Anthony Davis and Drew Holiday, and we have, as I've said many times if there was role player all-star game, Nico and Randall would start in it. So we don't really need, you know, we don't need that big name, even though people keep trying to say that we do. I think, you know, maybe the concern is you have to convince Anthony Davis that you don't need that big name, but in reality, we really don't with the way this team is structured and the roster we have now. We just need a couple more serviceable pieces in the seventh and eighth spot. I mean, the eighth and ninth spot in the rotation, and we'll be solid.
Amen to that. Anthony Davis just told NBA TV, this was a big statement game for us, and that's exactly what it was. The Pelicans have shown, if nothing else, barring injuries or any major unforeseen maladies like that, that they are a contender in the NBA, not necessarily to Golden State, but against anybody else. I think they've made it clear that they play their style of basketball, and they score at will. And defensively, when they are locked in, as Grubb talked about earlier, when they are engaged defensively for a full 48 minutes, they can shut down the fourth best offense in the NBA. So there's nowhere to go but up for our Pels right now. Again, you're listening to the Bird Calls podcast. Do us a favor, retweet this episode, you know, rate us on iTunes, subscribe, tell your friends, spread the word. We kind of rely on word of mouth right now. So anything you guys can do to help us, we certainly appreciate it. For myself, I'm Preston Ellis, Ali Cosell, David Grubb, Kevin Berrios. Big win tonight. Let's keep it rolling. Let's go, Pels. Thank you for listening to Do You Believe in Magic on the Off the Glass, Another Manette, and Up and Under podcast networks. If you like what you're hearing, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes, retweet, share with your friends, and most importantly, subscribe today.
Let's consider the secret life of the innermost nesting doll. Living most of her life in the dark, inside the other nesting dolls, she has plenty of time to think, if she could. Sadly, she has no brain. However, when an innermost nesting doll hears that Geico not only saves people money, but also has been providing great service for over 75 years, she thinks it's obvious you should switch. Because yes, switching to Geico is a no-brainer. Pity the innermost nesting doll and her lot in life.
Geico presents yet another voicemail from your roommate.
Hi, so about the kitchen. Turns out when there's a grease fire, you're not supposed to throw water on it. Who would have known, right? Anyways, the fire department is here and it's totally cool. Give me a call back when you get a chance.
The Geico Insurance Agency could help keep your personal property protected, like if danger is your roommate's middle name. Visit geico.com to see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance.